Everybody comfortable with the agenda? Thank you. And can I have a motion to approve the minutes from the April 11th meeting?
So moved.
All in favor?
Aye.
I just would note, too, that next month, we have three really critical items on the agenda. Safety report, where we can talk about some slippage in the first quarter and sort of where we're going there. Review of fatigue program, and also the first briefing from the longstanding study on the train control system. So I would hope we could get at least an hour, maybe an hour and a half for that meeting. It's important stuff. Not that what we're having today is not important stuff as well. We will get a couple of briefings from Rob Troop on some incidents, but the prime purpose of today's meeting is to get the quarterly police report. Welcome, Chief, to your first exposure to the committee, and I hope there'll be many more that have this kind of success that we are showing in this quarterly report. So I'll turn it over to you to go through the briefing.
Chair Downey, okay to start with our safety contact, and then
please
go from there. Good morning, Chairman Downey, members of the board. First, I'd like to touch on if the building alarm system goes off, that you exit through one of the doors, either behind me or in front of me, preferably actually in this direction, and move across the street near the nut and bolt, although we're going to have to look at a little bit because now the barbecue stand is set up over there, but we'd ask that we meet over there in the event of an emergency. That'd probably be a good spot, right? They're not opened yet, so until about 4. Thank you. And our safety contact this morning is we're expecting and forecasted beautiful weather for this Sunday, which provides us that it's a reminder of Mother's Day, and our safety contact is for outdoor grilling safety. Outdoor grilling is one of the most popular ways to cook food, but a grill placed too close to anything that can burn is a fire hazard. This can also be very hot, causing burn injuries. Fire departments respond to an average of 7,900 home fires involving grills each year, with 3,200 of those being structure fires. 33% of home grill structure fires start on an exterior balcony or unenclosed porch. If you follow these simple tips, you will be on your way to safe grilling. Only use grills outdoors. They're not designed to be used in garages or condos or apartments or homes, only outdoors with good ventilation. Place them away from the home and away from deck railings. Keep them out from under eaves and overhanging branches. Keep children and pets away from the grill area. Never leave your grill unattended. And if using charcoal, disposing of the coals is just as important as grilling safely. Best way is by placing them in a metal container and soak the coals with water. So please remember, there's no better way to celebrate summer than a barbecue outdoors, even across the street. So please follow these steps to keep your family safe from grilling accidents and injuries. Thank you, Chairman Downey. This would conclude my safety contact for this morning.
Good morning, Mr. Downey, members of the board. Prior to going over the first quarter crime stats for 2013, I would like to take this opportunity just to thank the men and women as well as the fellow Metro employees for their due diligence during the events of Boston. Although mass transit and Metro in particular is never a threat, it's always refreshing to see our fellow employees and our police do that extra vigilance. I'd also be remiss if I didn't thank the local and federal partners of my peers who provided me information real time. As we begin to look at our crime stats, we look at it just comparison to vital signs. We really measure it in three different modes, starting first with the parking lot. Our parking lot crime is continuing to trend downward, and this is a trend that we're seeing throughout the region. Some of that success we owe to the auto industry. It's getting tougher to steal cars with technology, and then when cars are stolen, the ability to track them similar to an electronic device. So some of that success is directly from the auto industry itself, and some we've done internally. We continue to use our return to work program, which has been very successful, and that's where we take Metro employees who can't perform their normal function and put them in our parking lots, and they ride around electric golf carts, and they are extra eyes and ears in the parking lots, and that's having a big success on certain parking lots where they're deployed every day. We also continue to use outreach and extensive outreach to our customers, whether it's through our variable message signs where we have them at key stations, warning customers to protect their valuables, keep valuables out of plain view. We've had numerous outreaches where we've given away wheel locking devices for their steering wheels. the way we deploy our bicycle officers through our CompStat process, and our smart trip cards. We continue to give smart trip cards to the city municipality police departments as well as the county police departments, and this affords them the opportunity to police our parking lots as well, and we believe that's also having a big impact on our parking lot crime. As we look at our rail crime, in comparison to the first quarter of 2012 to the first quarter of 2013, it is down overall by about 19%. Out of those 144 larceny thefts that we saw for the first quarter, over 65% of them are for the Apple iPhone, so that's where we stand our most challenging, and we try to continue with our outreach of our customers. We need technology to assist us there. So thanks to the help of Mr. Stessel, on our webpage starting today, we're going to have a link that provides customers with step-by-step tips on how to register their iPhone and their electronic devices like that. That technology is very helpful. What it does is once that cell phone is stolen, it allows the police to track the cell phone device down to really within 500 feet. We've had several cases this year already where we've been able to track cell phones down to the individual who had it in their pocket and arrest them and subsequently recover the phone. So technology is a big help there. The bricking that the FCC implemented last year, we really haven't seen the return on that yet, and that's a trend we're seeing throughout the nation. Most of these cell phones continue to be shipped overseas, but locally the technology piece is what we're really going to encourage our customers to do, and we're going to do that through our website and our dynamic screens and our kiosks. Bus crime did see a little bit of an increase this quarter. When we look at our bus crimes, it's still relatively low, about 1.4 per million riders. And the biggest increase we saw there were with the robberies. Last quarter we had only 7 robberies during the same time, and this quarter we've had 18. So we're going to continue with our surge-style deployment. We see that's having some big success. And what we do there is we take units from across the department, whether from our anti-terrorism team, our special operations, our patrol operations, all these different bureaus, and we either surge a particular geographical area or a particular line. So if we see crime is increasing on a particular route, we kind of hit that route at various times throughout the day. Whereas what we'll do, we'll take a major intersection where buses are traversing east and west or north and south, and we'll saturate that corner for a particular period of time. And that seems to be working. We're also using our officers more in a uniform capacity versus a plain clothes. And the bus drivers, when we attend the local safety committee meetings and things of that, they'd rather see the uniform. So we're kind of switching our deployment tactics. There's definitely a time for a uniform, and there's definitely a time for a plain clothes. Both of them have their advantages and their disadvantages. So we look for more opportunities to do that. When we look at our Part 1 crime, we're pleased to report that we're seeing a reduction of about 33% this quarter. That success is directly related to our parking lot crime as well as our pickpocket type offenses that we see a serious reduction in. Some of that's due to our crime suppression teams, where we had teams going out and specifically looking for these types of robberies that were occurring in our system. And the parking lot crime speaks for itself, as I discussed earlier. We're concerned that the bike theft, as you see, has really remained unchanged, and it's kind of a shotgun. It's not really affected one particular geographical area. We see it's really sprinkled throughout the system. So we're continuing to see how we can better deploy that. As the warm weather gets here, we know bike crime traditionally increases at this time. So we're really starting a crime prevention outreach with our customers where we provide them with U-locks. We provided a new brochure we created that gives them step-by-step instructions how to use our unique locks. Working with the WMATA's Office of Planning, we're looking at maybe we could look at other kiosk types similar to the one we installed at College Park last year. And then looking ways for maybe new camera technology that might be able to assist us and see if that won't. College Park is one success story we've had, and that's really due to the camera system and the kiosk that we installed there. Part 1, crime against person, is where we've seen our biggest increase with our robberies. And that continues. It's what's unique about the robberies, especially in the multi-jurisdictions that we police in. A simple larceny theft can quickly be elevated to a robbery, force, and violence. Depending on the jurisdiction, no matter how much force I use, no matter how slight or how aggressive, it elevates from a larceny theft to a robbery, force, and violence. And then sometimes what we're seeing is a young individual may lift up their shirt and display what appears to be the butt of a handgun, but you don't know if it's a real handgun or a BB gun. So then that would be classified as a robbery fear or a robbery armed. So we are trying to tackle that issue. We're doing it more with the shortening our beats, looking at our CompStat, and looking at our hotspots and our trends. We're looking at new technology, predictive policing, and things of that nature that can try to help us predict where the next crime is going to be. We just started using that software, and we're going to see how that works over the next 60 to 90 days. But as you can see, the trend is really for the electronic devices continue to be a hot spot, or hot issue, rather, that you're seeing throughout the nation, especially in transit-related properties and here even locally within the city. And the other issue, the other valuables, is the high-end shoes. There's a new composite shoes every time when some of those new shoes are released that becomes a target of opportunity for people. And then some high-end jackets that are really popular on the West Coast that we're starting to see here on the East Coast. So we're going to continue to look at that and just basically use our CompStat process to really make sure we're deploying our resources wisely and continue to educate our customers. The month of April was Sexual Awareness Month. We continue to partner with Collective Action for Safe Spaces. We did several different outreaches through the month of April with Caroline Lucas and her team, where we handed out bracelets, Metro pins, T-shirts, awareness tips, and that continues to be a great success for us. Our web portal continues to be up. We still continue to get harassment incidents on that website. I am pleased to report for the first quarter of 2013, we did make 3 adult arrests for indecent exposures that occurred on our system, and 1 for sexual assault. One thing that's really helpful is sometimes the customers aren't willing still to give their name or information, but they make us aware of it, which we still find very valuable because it helps us connect the dots. And it helps bring to our attention, well, this is occurring in one particular line of the system or one geographical station. Even though they didn't want to make a complaint, it helps us maybe link future cases together. So we're continuing to see success with the website. Prior to taking any questions, I would like to quickly address the recent red line issues that were on the news last week or the week before that regarding juvenile disorder. Obviously, we were very disturbed or troubled by that behavior that the news showed, and we're continuing to work with the school systems. Each day, we do participate in a conference call with the local police department, the Metropolitan Police, and D.C. Public Schools, and continue to talk about crime trends occurring within the schools. And this conference call is very important because they share with us what's happening in the schools during the day. And then we talk about any events that happened the night before within the last 24 hours that deal with youth. We're still starting to have certain schools we've identified, and we've identified those administrators, and they're now reaching out to us more. And that that relationship is improving with the school administrators. We definitely need their support and help. And then working with the judicial system on the other side, we can't. We need to ensure that the juveniles aren't always diverted for some of these offenses because it sometimes sends the wrong message to the youth. So we are going to continue to work on that and address those issues, continue with our daily conference call, and then once we figure out who the key players are, most of the schools wear very unique identifying uniforms. So we've identified the schools in question, and we're looking for a future meeting with those key stakeholders. So at this time, I'd take any questions anybody might have.
Thank you, Chief, for that report. And I wanted to make sure, though, I'm not a member of this committee, that I was here to address the last point that you raised about school safety. And how exactly are we, how is, you know, these incidents between kids on the system, how do we characterize that in our reports? How do they show up?
It depends on the nature of it. A lot is what we're finding out when I met with Chief Lanier last week to discuss that very issue is a lot of these incidents are occurring in neighborhoods that spew over into the metro system. So is what would happen is if a call goes out for a fight at a particular station or a group of disorderly youth, is what we do. We come to the station. The first thing we do, we look if there's any victim of a crime. If there's no victim of a crime, we try to get the crowd to disperse. Is what we traditionally do is we'll break them up. We'll say, okay, you 10, catch that train, wait for another train, and send another group on. So we would not initiate a police report if the call was for a fight and there's no victim of a crime. In order to initiate a police report, we would have to capture that as a victim. So our computer-aided dispatch would capture the incident that we responded, but it would be classified as no report.
Because I think that there must be a way for us to be able to know if there's an incident or almost incident so that we are getting to this. And, you know, I know that you're very familiar with the school issues. We've had the occasion to work together around issues in our area in Fort Totten. And I have found that it's been the most effective thing is to get those school leaders in place and around the table. So I would like, when you have that meeting, to know who you know, I like to sit on that, in on that meeting, if you could let me know when it is, so that we know all the school leaders and make sure that the appropriate attention is being played to their role in working with the police and working with you around those issues. So we would really appreciate that. But also, Mr. Downey, I think that we have to figure out a way to figure out something to call it. We know what it is, some measurement, so we can see the resources that you're using to address those almost incidents and how everybody involved is working together to decrease them.
So can you give that some thought as to how we could keep track?
Yes,
we can. The old saying goes, what gets measured, what gets managed, and this is something we really should be managing.
Okay.
Other questions? Yes, Tom.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Thanks for the report. I noticed that we've got motorcycles, patrols. How many do we have, and how are they kind of used?
Currently, we have 5 motorcycles, and we use them in a variety of different ways. We constantly are changing them. We only use our motorcycles office during the day. For safety reasons, we don't like deploying them at night. So traditionally, they'll have a morning detail at parking lots where they're looking at our parking lots, and then they switch a little bit late afternoon or early morning into the bus crime. So is what we do is we basically, our CompStat decides how we deploy those resources, and we do basically at the needs of the day. So they're very flexible. It's a small unit, but it's a very quick unit that we can deploy quickly.
Is that an added extra to Ms. Bowser's question vis-a-vis school proximity and metro stations and people moving back and forth that causing, you think motorcycles could be used to intervene or break up these crowds or before the fight happens? Or
we do them sometimes. Again, it depends on the number of resources we have working that day and what they're dedicated to. Because sometimes we do focus them on bus, or sometimes we'll stage them at Anacostia. So it depends on the intelligence that we get from the 1 o'clock conference call and how we'll deploy them for the rest of their shift.
I think you covered this in the briefing, but I just wanted to be certain. You are continuing the CompStat.
Yes, we host that every 2 weeks. And then we have weekly reports that each bureau writes. Mm-hmm. We don't wait for the two-week period before we make it a deployment adjustment. So every Friday I have weekly reports, and then that Monday we will adjust resources accordingly.
So that the process here is basically smart policing and making best use of resources.
Yes, we recently acquired a new software product through a company, and it's basically looking at predictive policing. A lot of police departments out west have started this. LA's have seen some great success with it, and some other towns in Arizona. But basically the way predictive policing works is the information that you put in for it, the trends, the crimes that are occurring, and then through analytics and software, this software predicts where the next crime will be, or at least picks the hot area and breaks it down by either time of day, day of week, and area. So transit is kind of unique to it. It's going to work, we think, really great for the bus, and then the challenge will be how will it work in the rail system. We've only had it for about a week or so, so hopefully over the next 90 days or so, we'll be able to see how good the product is in a transit environment.
On the bus robberies, are those also largely the iPhone, cell phones? Or?
It is, and it's what's interesting is some of the tactics that we see in the rail system with criminals is now morphing over to the bus side, where the victims are usually getting on or off a bus.
Catching them before they get on the
yes.
bus.
Yes, and then is what's challenging for law enforcement is once that robbery occurs at a bus stop and the individual flees into a neighborhood, it becomes very challenging to try to find them, and almost impossible at that point. So that's
if the phone is registered, that may be a way to try
them. And that's key, is using that technology to our advantage.
Yeah, so again, enforcing the message, reinforcing the message, get your phone registered so it can be tracked.
Yes.
Other questions?
One other question for Mr. Sorrells. That's okay. Have we kind of done a best practices kind of search with other systems that move a lot of kids on the system in lieu of a school bus system? To see if there's some policies that might help us manage the kids on transit for school.
We could look at that.
I would just be interested if there are any tactics that might help us manage better. Thank you.
Okay, Mr. Troop.
Okay.
Yes, yeah, yeah, safety incidents.
Good morning. There are two specific instances I want to speak about today. We had a red signal violation and a yard derailment. The red signal violation occurred on April 22nd in Van Ness and involved a train passing a red signal without authorization, proceeding 20 feet beyond the approved limit before coming to a complete stop. No injury or accident resulted from this action. We have a very systematic approach to looking into these instances and treat each one with a high degree of importance. We investigate all claims that are made by the operator, verifying the information through the use of the information train downloads, wayside downloads, operation control center information, and our team also verifies site distances and recordings as well as the audio recordings. Each instance is treated separately and managed with the Department of Safety, Engineering, and the Operations Group. This particular incident is still currently under investigation, and appropriate steps will be taken once cause is determined. I would also like to review the derailment that occurred at Brentwood Yard on the evening of April 6th, where one truck of one car left the rail. Investigation of the incident indicated we had several circumstances which, by occurring simultaneously, caused a low-speed wheel climb, resulting in the derailment. The six-car train derailed while leaving Brentwood Yard, where the last truck of the fifth car, which was a 4000 series, dropped onto the ground. The train was non-revenue, without passengers, with the derailment occurring in the limits of the yard, and ended in the first three cars of the consist fouling the main line. But I do need to point out that no derailed truck at any time entered the main line. When we determine cause of derailments, our focus is on two main items, the car and the track. Our teams of engineers and technicians investigate and determine out-of-tolerance or near-tolerance items. And through this process, we're able to provide conclusions as to the cause of the incident. For track, we measure the conditions of the various items. We measure track gauge, vertical and lateral stability, track leveling, track under load, rail profile, curvature, and also visual inspections of track where we might see unusual markings on either the rail or the ties. The car itself is checked for wheel profile, balancing, truck movement, suspension tolerances, and also speed conformance. Two items which stood out to us on this particular derailment were the truck suspension and the track vertical stability. Both of these were near limit. The track vertical stability deals with the vertical movement of the track as the train weight goes over the rail. The ties are supported by the baluster stones, which are underneath the ties. And in this instance, as the train passed over the area, we had some vertical or some up and down movement of the track bed. We had some up and down movement of the track bed. It was in tolerance, but as stated, it was near tolerance. The truck itself was in balance. The wheels were newly profiled, and the lateral movement of the truck was in good condition. A lateral movement is how the truck moves around the curve. Go ahead, Mike. I have a model of the truck, which will help kind of illustrate how all this works. Bring here. Mm-hmm. So this is a truck. This is what hit the ground. And basically what we check on is, you know, the car body sits here. And naturally, as it goes around a curve, you know, it acts like this. Now, if this is stiff, you know, the car is going to drive that up on a curve. What we check is to make sure that this, you know, radius in the turning of it is not stiff and it's within tolerance. And there were no issues with that, which was good. What we did have issues with, though, were the chevron springs. The chevron springs are basically rubber pads, which are mounted between steel plates. And the chevron springs sit right in here. And what they do is they provide the suspension for the truck. What we had was a near tolerance condition where the trucks over time, the chevron springs over time, were compressed to the point of the limit. It creates a stiffer suspension. So we had those two items. We had a vertical up and down motion of the track, which was near tolerance. We had a stiff suspension, which was also near tolerance. And now what I'm going to say is going to sound counterintuitive to, you know, the result of why we had a derailment. But also contributing to the derailment were the fact that we had good rail, a newly trued wheel, dry conditions, The train was moving after being stopped. It was a slow speed, and it was on a curve. This is because all of these conditions lead to a higher lateral coefficient of friction, which can cause the wheel to climb on the rail. There's two forces which act on the rail. There's the vertical force, which is against the top of the head of the rail, and this is the wheel tread that sits against here. That's the vertical force. And then you also have a lateral force, which is the wheel flange, which sits here, and it, you know, pushes here. So the vertical force should be at least twice what the lateral force is. However, the profile of the wheel, the profile of the rail, the dry conditions, and the fact it was on a curve created this increase in these lateral forces. And also, you notice if you ever pushed a car, and I'm talking about an automobile, not a rail car, but if you ever pushed a car, the hardest part is to get it started. That's the tractive effort, and the coefficient of friction is highest at that point. So like I said, the car was stopped. So what you have is you have a rail, you have the flange sitting against, you have the flange sitting against the side of the railhead. You have a high coefficient of friction against that. So the wheel, as it spins, it has a tendency to climb because there's a high coefficient of friction. There's a lot of movement there. It has a tendency to climb. So not only was the wheel climbing, but we had the rail that was moving in a downward motion. So we had these two instances which were occurring at the same time, both of them, again, at near tolerance. So what we've done is, on this, as we investigate this, is to increase the angle at which we profile the wheels. Currently, we were doing 63-degree profile. Again, that leads to a higher lateral coefficient of friction. We're going to 70 degrees. The engineering department had already started this investigation, this analysis into this well prior to this, and they had, in fact, had introduced maintenance instructions to start profiling the wheels at 70 degrees. Now, what's interesting is this is how our wheels naturally wear to a profile of 70 degrees. So many of our trains are already at that profile. We also have been putting graphite sticks on. And graphite sticks basically are go against the flange of the rail or flange of the wheel here, and it creates a lubricant against the side of the rail and the wheel flange here. So it decreases that coefficient of friction. And not all trucks are needed to be put on sticks are needed to be put on these trucks because you don't want to have too much graphite out there, you know, for various other reasons. But so we're comfortable with the amount that we have on there currently and how we're progressing that. So the main question is, I know, is can this occur on the main line? You know, that's what we want to need to know. And the answer is no. And the reason for that is we have much higher tolerances for this vertical stability of the track. Not only are our standards much higher, but we continually go out there and do surfacing or compress the ballast and stones under the track. So we don't have nearly the amount of movement within the rail that we do on the main line in these specific instances. So the potential for these simultaneous events occurring is actually eliminated as a result of that. So if there's any questions. Sir.
A man after my own heart, Mr. Troop, reminded me of my 1964 engineering mechanics lecture, and I hadn't seen that formula in that long a period. You know, good report. I like your verbiage much better than the actual written material, so try to put some of it in here in the future, particularly the conclusions. So that's all I have, but thank you for the reminder and the lesson.
Yeah, thank you.
Walter?
Thanks, Mr. Chairman. Good report. I didn't take that class that Tony had at the esteemed University of Pittsburgh. My kind of layman's question is, how many curves do we have that this could happen again in the yards? And well, are we taking the curves out of the yard?
Well, track? We can't take the curves out of the yards because of the way that the profile is, the geometry, you know, so the curves are not something that we can take out. But what we can do is we can go through and we can be able to, you know, tamp the yards up. It's one of the things that we do. We have a process now because we are able to now, because a lot of our backlog on the main line, you know, we are starting to reduce the backlog on the main line. So a result of that, we're able to go into the yards now. For example, you know, we have frogs in the yards which need to be replaced. Now that we've I'm sorry? The frogs, where the, yeah, we have frogs, it's where the rails cross each other. It's where the rails cross each other. So we're able to go in and do a lot more maintenance in the yards now that we're starting to reduce that backlog off. So
follow on question. We got this high-tech machine that's supposed to be rolling around the system with geometrics, and I don't know how it works, but Tony, I'm sure, can explain it to me. At lunch, Tim, does this machine that we got recently, is it in service, checking the rails, and B, does it go into the yards?
It is in service. We do not have it in the yards at this point. Okay, we do not have it in the yards at this point because we have a regular process through checking the main line. So,
yeah, and it was supposed to be. And I think,
yeah, and the wheel, and again, and also to the wheel reprofiling the wheels to 70 degrees will help significantly on this.
Yeah, so I think that's good evidence of learning from a particular incident. Actually, you're saying some of the changes were already in place. But I think the other lesson is, classically, one thing doesn't cause a problem. It's when several things all happen at once that the incident occurs. And fortunately, in this case, it was one that taught the lesson without creating any kind of a serious problem. But we thank you for the report. Yes, Ms. Porter.
You mentioned that the car that on which this happened was a 4000 series car. And I know we've had other problems with that series. Was there anything about the car itself that contributed to this?
There was nothing about the series of the car that contributed this. Again, we think that, again, because the suspension was stiffer, and that was stiffer over time because of how the Chevron springs compress, that was a contributing factor. But there was nothing actually that had dealt with the series of the car being an issue.
Yes. One follow-on question. I always ask, what's the Silver Line rail yard? Is it going to have frogs and curves and everything like we have everywhere else?
Yes. Yes. Yeah. Yeah. You have to have frogs and curves. The geometry has to be in there to be able to get in there.
So think about the geometry, Tom. You've got a bunch of tracks that are in there that are straight, and they all have to go through a curve to get to the one place to get out of the yard, which is what? Right. And that's the way yards are. But the fact that we have the resource now to get in and do maintenance in the yards is a sign of a system that's continuing to come back. Right. Any other questions? If no other questions, we'll adjourn the meeting, and we look forward to next month's discussion. As I said at the beginning, those are some very important issues that we need to be dealing with on the long-term health. And I'll turn it over to Mr.